Austin McWilliams is my guest once again, and Austin is a graduate student in the School of Music at Western Michigan University. We've had some chats over the last weeks and months about concerts held at the School of Music, an orchestral concert in which Austin was a student conductor. And just last week, we talked about the opera workshop weekend in which you conducted two one acts. Was it Puccini and Ravel?
Puccini and Ravel, you got it.
So, Austin, we are here today to preview another choral event, the Choral Showcase, which is coming up on Sunday. But first, could I hear a little bit about how things went on Saturday and Sunday, the two operas, the whole cast, and of course, Carl Ratner was your stage director, and did you pull it off?
We did pull it off with a lot of success, too. I'm so proud of all the students and musicians, instrumentalists, and the stage crew. It was really a wonderful couple of productions and a wonderful couple of nights. Dr. Ratner and I just couldn't be happier about the way things went.
Personally, for you, sitting at, standing at the podium and directing the cast, directing the small orchestra, did you ever think you'd be doing that in, like, 2 years ago?
Absolutely not. No, that's a firm no. But it was a really exhilarating experience and something that I've never done before, but something that I now know that I hope to do again.
What helped the most in preparing for it?
Oh, man. What helped the most in preparing for these operas? I hate to say this, but maybe the snow days.
Okay.
Well, I just had so much extra time to really polish the instrumentation and exactly how I was going to reduce this orchestration for all of the operas,
right,
and to communicate with the instrumentalist and with the singers as much as possible. And even though we did lose some rehearsal time, we were able to make a lot of it up. And it was almost nice for me to have a little bit of extra time to really put those details in there that I think were able to make the operas what they were this week.
That's close to what I thought you were going to say. Last week, you were holding the scores to your chest as you came in and left, and I just assumed it was, I learned the pieces in and out, inside and out, and that would give enough confidence to know this cannot completely fall apart. I know how to bring everyone back together if we have issues, and the show must go on.
That's right. I mean, one of the most interesting things that I learned about conducting opera is that, unlike most other art forms, you're conducting people who are off book, those being the singers.
Right.
And so more than I think any other style of conducting I've had to do before, clarity is so important in knowing exactly when to bring the singers in and giving them the confidence to perform on stage and the confidence to know that you've got their backs if something happens.
Did you find yourself sometimes mouthing the lines?
Never mouthing the lines. No. They were much more prepared than that. But certainly there were some trickier cues where I had to be very explicitly communicative with them. But they really pulled it off.
Well, congratulations. It sounds like a real achievement for this year for you and maybe for, your career to date.
Thanks. Yeah, we're all still on a high from it.
Yeah, well, on to the next thing.
That's right, coming weekend.
Yeah, what is happening this weekend? Tell our listeners, if you would.
Well, we've got the Choral Showcase this weekend. Every semester, the choirs of WMU present about two concerts, and so we have the first of our two big concerts this semester. It'll be Sunday at 3 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And we have the three traditional choirs, University Chorale, Cantus Femina, and Collegiate Singers, all performing.
These are three of, I think, probably about six total choirs that Western supports throughout campus.
That's right. Well, it depends how you slice it. We have those three, then we have Campus Choir, which is open to anyone. We have Grand Chorus, which is all the choirs combined. Add that to Gold Company, GC2, and Opera Chorus, and that brings us to about eight.
Incredible. So 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and it's a free concert for anyone who heads out to the Dalton Center Recital Hall. First up in the program is the Collegiate singers. Are you involved with this group as well?
I am, yeah. I'm conducting a couple pieces, two of the four pieces that they'll be singing, and I've been heavily involved with them since the beginning of my time here. It's really one of the highlight of my days, getting to sing with them and conduct them, and they're also forming the meat of my recital choir for my master's recital later this semester. So I have a really intimate relationship with that choir and those singers.
Okay, well, what are you conducting on Sunday?
Well, on Sunday, it'll be a couple pieces. The first one is the Introit and Kyrie of Antonio Salieri's Requiem, and the second one will be a piece by contemporary composer Elliot Z. Levine called I Think You God, setting that text of E.E. Cummings.
Starting with the Salieri, what did you know of this composer? Were you assigned this piece, or did you kind of say, hey, I really like it, and I would like the choir to try it?
You know, I chose this piece. I wasn't assigned it. This semester has been really fun because my recital is later in the semester, so these two pieces that I'm conducting on this concert will also go on my recital. So this piece by Salieri is interesting because I think most people don't necessarily know Salieri for his compositions as much as they do for his controversy in relation to Mozart.
It was so well dramatized in that Amadeus film that it's like we remember it that way. And that was just mostly fiction.
It was mostly fiction, you're right. But it creates a great story, if nothing else.
He was kind of a giant in the music world during his day. Put in charge of all kinds of projects and choirs and, providing music for royal events, nobility, and so much. You know, he was on top.
He was on top, and he was an especially harsh critic of certain musicians as well.
Younger musicians?
Yeah, perhaps so, perhaps so. I mean, I think that some of this criticism is what fueled these rumors about Salieri's relationship with Mozart, which then came to fruition in that movie Amadeus. And a lot of these things were false, but I think it's sort of is a representation, a dramatic representation of a relationship that they had, but I think on a less dramatic scale in real life.
Mm-hmm. And it was Mozart's Requiem that he was working on at the end of this drama.
That's right.
But here you're preparing the opening of Salieri's Requiem.
That's correct.
Did he write just one, or are there several to choose from?
He wrote just one Requiem. And the great irony of the situation is that Salieri was indeed able to finish his Requiem, and Mozart wasn't. So that's actually a compositional achievement that he has over Mozart. But we're doing the first movement of that one, which is just the Introit and Kyrie. And then we'll have a couple other pieces that are conducted by Dr. Kimberly Dunn Adams, one of which is a South African folk song called Indodana. And the other is a piece by living composer Barnum called The Stars Stand Up in the Air. It's just a really beautiful piece and sets some lovely poetry.
Okay. We are talking about the opening of the Choral Showcase on Sunday at 3 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's a chance to see three choirs, including Cantus Femina, which is an all-female choir, and so we're talking alto and soprano arrangements.
Correct.
And the Collegiate Singers and the University Chorale. And now, I know the chorale is a fairly lean group, like 24, maybe 32 at the most.
Yeah, we're up to 34 singers this semester. Okay. We generally run around 32 to 35.
And how about the Collegiate Singers?
Collegiate Singers is larger. It's the largest of our choral ensembles, other than Grand Chorus, of course. But this semester we're running, I think, at around 55 singers in collegiates.
Maybe we can move on now to at least touch on some of the pieces Cantus Femina will be performing. And actually, as I turn over to the program notes, it is a single piece by a woman composer, Linda Tudis Haugen.
That's correct.
And it focuses on the diaries of Anne Frank.
Yeah, this piece is, all of the text from it actually comes from the diaries of Anne Frank. And it's interesting the way that she sets this text so that it doesn't feel like we're just hearing arbitrary textual excerpts from the diary, but it really tells an entire story, and you can feel a compositional arc from the beginning to the end. It's about half an hour of a single piece that Cantus is going to be performing. I think it's going to be really moving and really emotionally charged. And it really speaks to Dr. Dolores Gauthier, who's, of course, the conductor of Cantus, and how she really champions these new compositions, often by underrepresented composers. And these compositions are almost always emotionally taxing and yet really musically revealing in many ways.
Are you familiar with a piece for solo soprano written by Samuel Barber called Knoxville, Summer of 1915?
No, I'm not.
It's a piece in which he took prose from a book by James Agee and turned it into music. And to me, that is the model for taking something that doesn't rhyme at the end of every line, you know, taking a prose, a paragraph, and setting it to music. And it seems like that it must be what Linda Tudas Haugen had to accomplish with the diary of Anne Frank. It's all directly quotes from her diary. So it presents an interesting challenge.
It certainly does, yeah. All of the text that's in this composition is just that. It's text from her diary. It's not poetry. So it creates that much more interest in listening to it, because we're really hearing her words as they were on the page, of course translated into English now.
What I see is these excerpts really run the gamut of her moods and thoughts from the experience of being in the attic and having to stay completely silent during the day, to her feelings for the young boy who was mm-hmm. also with her, and her hopes for her future. It really goes through so many of her moods, just like we get when we read the diaries themselves. So it's a very whole kind of look.
It is, yeah. We really get to see all different aspects of Anne Frank and her work here. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Cantus has actually performed this piece before, once at an ACDA, American Choral Directors Association convention, years ago. So I know that this is a piece that Dr. Gauthier, really loves and holds near and dear to her heart.
I'm speaking with Austin McWilliams, who is a graduate assistant conductor for the University Chorale, the Collegiate Singers, and Dr. Kim Adams and Dee Gauthier will be there for the concerts, of course, too. And that is Sunday at 3 o'clock. And I sounded like I said plural. I mean, one concert.
At
3 o'clock on Sunday at the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Well, let's hear some music. You suggested a couple of songs the University Chorale will be performing, and one by one of my favorite composers, Benjamin Britten.
Benjamin Britten, of course.
He's charming. He knew how to write for voice. He adored vocal music, of course. So
it's just a joy to sing his music. It feels good.
Yeah. What are the five flower songs about? Where'd they come from?
Well, I have the score here in front of me, and Britten signs it at the top, to Leonard and Dorothy Elmhurst on this occasion of their 25th wedding anniversary, April 3rd, 1950. The Elmhursts were a wealthy family in England, and Britten was quite good friends with them. They were also botanists. So he composed this for them for their anniversary, and we just have five pieces here in this booklet that all have to do with flowers. And it's interesting because the poetry that he sets, it's by five different poets, and in fact, one of the texts comes from an unknown poet. It's simply just an anonymous ballad. But it really runs the poetic gamut of British poetry. It's not like all the poems are taken from a single era or a single poet, and so Chorale is actually just going to perform two of these. That'll be the first movement, Two Daffodils, and the fourth movement, The Evening Primrose.
Wow, is that ever seasonally accurate? We're about to see both popping up around Michigan. So let's hear the first, Two Daffodils, by Benjamin Britten. It's a very short little piece.
Yes, and they all are, in fact.
Yeah, so we'll be right back with Austin McWilliams after we hear Two Daffodils.
Thank you.
That's Music of Benjamin Britten, and I'm with Austin McWilliams. Is this one of the pieces you'll conduct, or no?
No, I won't be conducting this one.
You know what I hear in that opening is the multi-fluorescence of spring. It sounds like, whoa, it's time. The birds, the flowers, everything is blooming at once, and the joyousness is almost a little chaotic.
Isn't it great? Yeah, and it's funny that you say that because Britten actually marks that movement allegro impetuoso, meaning, of course, impetuous.
Yeah.
I think that recording really showcases that.
Oh, fantastic. And you'll be performing this piece about daffodils and then another about the evening primrose.
That's right.
Does it have some contrast to it?
Oh, certainly. The evening primrose would be the opposite of impetuous. It's by a romantic poet, a romantic British poet, and it's much slower. The interesting thing about it is that even though it is metric on the page, it's simply in 4-4 time the entire time, it actually doesn't quite feel like that. It feels almost ametric and like we're just speaking the text. It almost comes across as chant just because of the way that Britten sets it on the page. It's really remarkable.
You mentioned that it is a pleasure to sing music written by Benjamin Britten. Is that true across the board in your experience? And can you maybe tell us a little more about why you say that?
Yeah, well, I've sung quite a bit of Britten now, and I haven't met a piece yet that I found uncomfortable. You know, we singers can be a bit finicky about which composers we like to sing. And, you know, you hear singers say, oh, Beethoven, for instance. That's a guy who didn't know how to write for the voice. And if you even just take his Ninth Symphony, that last movement where you bring in the chorus, it's incredibly difficult to sing. And it's
awesome, though.
It is awesome. It sounds really wonderful. But if you're on the other side of that stage where you're in front of the conductor instead of behind the conductor, I'll be honest, it doesn't feel that good. And you really have to pace out your rehearsing so that you don't damage the singers. Whereas when you're rehearsing Britten like this, it almost feels like you could do it forever. I mean, chorale rehearses 50 minutes at a time, and many of the rehearsals leading up to this concert cycle, we've done Britten for all 50 minutes. He really knows how to write for the voice. And when I say that, I mean each of the parts, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, he really knows where the meat of their range lies and tries to stick most of his part writing within that range or tessitura most of the time. And he saves only the most important moments of the song to really extend the ranges of the part. So I sing alto, for instance, as a countertenor. And so he throws in only one high E flat, that'd be an E flat 5, into that first movement. Only one. And only a few notes below the staff also. Everything else sits very gently within the alto range. And yet you as the listener, I don't think, would say that it sounds tame just because Britten chose to write like that. Mm. In fact, I think just the opposite is true. Because he writes so well for the voice, the impetuousness can come across even more.
That's interesting. Doesn't it sort of make you think about that high E flat for the entire movement, though?
It does. I look forward to it.
Oh, you look forward to it.
I do.
That's fascinating that you sing countertenor. Are you basically self-guided? I don't know of any countertenor instructors around.
Well, no, Dr. Ken Pruitt, who's the chair of the voice area, he's taught a few countertenors before, so I'm in his studio.
Okay. Is that something you're also considering as a performance option in the future?
Certainly. I'll do anything that involves making music and making a little money, hopefully.
Yeah. Does it also, does it restrict you to Baroque repertoire, or is there plenty of parts out there now for countertenor voices?
Well, when it comes to choral singing, most choruses are pretty accepting of countertenors at this point, no matter what the repertoire is. But when it comes to solo singing, you're not going to find me singing any Schubert part songs on stage, I'll tell you that much.
We're here talking about the choral showcase, which is 3:00 on Sunday. And we should point out the tragedy that the chorale didn't have a chance to perform its full concert because of the polar vortex and the university shutting down, which it so rarely does. So it was about 2 weeks ago the chorale was totally prepared to perform a full concert. Was it on a Wednesday night, I think?
That's right. It's part of the Bullock Performance Institute series.
So this is the makeup in a way.
This is the makeup in a way.
Although it was already scheduled.
Right. That concert earlier in the semester was going to be a full length, about an hour and a half concert by chorale. And so we're going to have an abbreviated version of it at this choral showcase. We'll have a little more than half an hour of material to present.
We have yet to talk about probably the meat of the chorale section, which is a full cantata by Johann Sebastian Bach. We'll be ending the hour with that piece. But let's look a little further up the program. After the Breton comes a piece by Daniel Elder, born in 1986. So this is a new piece, new composer, to me at least.
Yeah, certainly. He's quite popular with the Westminster crew, that being Joe Miller, who's the director of choral activities there. And so they actually recorded an entire album of his songs not too many years ago. And the piece that we're performing, it's called Lullaby, where the text and the composition is by Daniel Elder. And it's quite sweet. In fact, I have a word here from the work itself from Elder. He says, "Lullaby is the final installation of three nocturnes for mixed chorus and piano." So here we have another set where we're performing one of the set. And I know that Joe Miller himself would say that a piece like this is just candy.
Why don't we hear it? I'm with Austin McWilliams, and the University Chorale, the Collegiate Singers, and Cantus Femina perform on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Dalton Center Recital Hall. The piece is called Lullaby by a Daniel Elder, and what a heartfelt, straightforward, beautiful piece, Austin.
It is. He says that he is influenced especially by the Impressionist, and even in those first few bars of the piano introduction, you can almost hear a little bit of Debussy in there, can't you?
No, I was really thinking like straight ahead. Four-part, like almost folk-like singing.
Really?
Yeah.
I just hear those interesting dissonances and harmonies in the first few bars, and I can almost hear the runs of Clair de Lune within those.
Oh, wow. Well, that's the difference between being in the choir and just hearing it one time. But regardless, it'll be a wonderful piece included on the choral showcase on Sunday at 3 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Austin and I have covered a whole lot of repertoire. There are three choirs involved, Collegiate Singers and Cantus Femina. Maybe a quick recap on some of the highlights of those earlier two choirs, and then we can finally get into the Bach here. Would you mind going back for a second to tell?
Sure. Yeah, so Collegiate Singers is going to be first on the program. They'll perform four pieces altogether, a couple of which are conducted by me and a couple by Dr. Kimberly Dunn Adams. And this will just be a variety of pieces from a South African folk song to an excerpt of Salieri's Requiem to a contemporary piece by Elliot Z. Levine called I Thank You, God.
And then the Anne Frank settings from a woman composer. I've lost her name. I think it's Haugen.
Yes, Linda Tutas Haugen.
And that's from Cantus Femina. Well, now it's time to talk about cantatas, talk about Johann Sebastian Bach, possibly the greatest composer to ever live. But what I know is that cantatas were actually really part of his work. I mean, these pieces were used on a weekly basis with his congregation.
Yes, and he even went through periods of his career where he was composing one of these things a week.
Which is, so that's another reason that he's given the credit he has today.
It's really amazing. And they run about 15 to, I don't know, 25 minutes long a piece, approximately, most of them do. And so that's just so much music to crank out in a week. And so this is why today we have this body of about 200 cantatas to choose from. It's really stunning.
And who, does he require a top-notch group of singers, or did he mold them for the singers of his church who might be of various ability levels?
Well, one of the great things about Bach is that even in his day when he was quite young, he was recognized as quite a talent. So he was never working at any churches that were, well, slouches when it came to musicians. So really all of his pieces, even when being performed today, require extraordinarily strong musicians in order to sing all of these runs with all these accidentals accurately.
And they also include instrumentalists, and I assume organ. If you have, if you don't have a band, you can also use organ as accompaniment. On Sunday, how will you accompany the cantata?
On Sunday, we'll actually have full strings and organ, which is likely the way that this cantata was performed back in the 18th century. So we will have four violins, two on first violin and two on second violin. We'll have two violas. We'll have a cellist, a double bass, and then, of course, Dr. Schrock, university organist, on the portative organ in the recital hall.
Bach's Christlag in Todesbanden is the name of the cantata, and it is, well, I'm trying to get to this point, BWV 4.
Right.
It sounds like a very low opus number here.
Yes. And the interesting thing about these numbers is that they're not actually in order of publication like opus numbers might be. This is actually just a catalog number, so it's the way that the musicologists have decided to catalog these works by Bach, which was admittedly somewhat arbitrary. So the fact that it's number 4 isn't terribly relevant, other than people often know BWV 4 as one of his hallmark cantatas.
Oh, so this piece, and why don't you give us an introduction to like the opening and what are some features that we can listen for?
Yeah, so this is a chorale cantata, which essentially means that Bach has taken a chorale that would have been sung in the Lutheran church, and he created an entire composition around it. So we can take the great Protestant reformer Martin Luther, who's written this text, Christlag in Todesbanden, from 1524. Bach has taken the melody and actually harmonized it around the early 18th century, and he's created this chorale cantata behind it. So this cantata has 8 movements total, the first of which is a sinfonia, meaning it features only the instrumentalist, but the next 7 movements of this chorale actually, or of this cantata, actually feature the 7 verses of the text by Martin Luther. Just 1 verse per movement. It's quite straightforward.
I was talking to you before we came on the air, and we were kind of figuring out maybe how it would have been used on a Sunday, which is you'd hear some of the music and then some speaking from the pastor, maybe on the same subject of the text.
Almost certainly, yeah, which is one of the reasons why Bach was having to crank these things out so often at certain periods of his career. He was under such pressure oftentimes from the clergy to get things like this done. And it's funny because this is a cantata that is often dated to 1724 or 1725, but in fact it first existed, it was likely first composed as early as 1707 or 1708, so we're talking pretty young Bach here. But we see Bach in a number of his compositions recycle things. For instance, in this cantata, we likely had the first version in around 1707 or 1708 without any brass. And along came 1724, 1725. He needed another cantata, and so he changed just a few things and said, well, here's a new composition, and this is actually the way that we know it today. So it's so interesting when we try to ascribe dates to compositions like these, because I don't think a single date can ever tell of the compositional history of a work from this era, when composers were under such pressure to finish things that they were forced to recycle things at times.
And there's safety in the fact that no one has records. There's no YouTube. There's no recording industry. People heard it once 15 years ago. It's pretty safe to get it right back out and, put a little gloss on it and here's a new piece.
Exactly. I mean, that's a space of, like you said, 15 years. So why not? Especially, I think Bach wasn't afraid to do it with this cantata because it's such a wonderful cantata and it's really a hallmark of his compositional oeuvre.
Let's listen to the opening of this cantata BWV 4 by Johann Sebastian Bach, and we'll be back with Austin McWilliams. Sorry to have to interrupt this beautiful recording of Bach's cantata BWV 4. Austin, you rattled off the German title. Maybe you should translate that and tell us what this text is actually dealing with.
Sure. That German title is Christ lag in Todesbanden, which approximately translates to Christ lay in death's bonds. So here we see Bach setting the text of a poet where this poetry, it's biblically based, but it's not explicitly from the Bible. And we essentially see Bach trace Jesus's death to the saving of all of Christendom and the forgiveness of sins by the end of the cantata.
We just heard an incredible quiet point of the cantata where everything was reduced to just two voices in sort of continuo.
Exactly.
Yeah. So who will be performing this duet?
Well, I'll be one of them. I'll be the alto on that. And Caitlin Borky, who is actually one of the winners of the concerto competition just this past weekend, she will be the soprano.
Wonderful. A soprano competition winner. That's great.
Yes.
How does it sound in that, in those confines of a practice room at the Dalton Center? I mean, can you really use your proper voice when in a box of a room?
I'll be honest, I really don't like singing in the practice rooms in Dalton. So
no.
I have a key to the organ studio, Dr. Schrock's organ studio, which is really large and resonant. And so every once in a while I go to practice my singing in there. And so Caitlin and I have been practicing this movement in that room much more often.
I can imagine it. That's probably better for all concerned, because a lot of singing is gauging your voice and how it carries sometimes.
Exactly, and finding the resonance of the space. And the organ studio is certainly much more comparable to the recital hall than is one of the boxy practice rooms.
Well, we have covered the full concert of the university chorale, the Cantus Femina, and collegiate singers. It's this Sunday at 3 o'clock, and I need to let you go so that you can head back to the Dalton Center. But any final thoughts on this cantata? We'll finish up with a few more movements, I think.
Yeah, of course. Well, I've got here just a copy of the Methodist hymnal in front of me, and I'm just looking at hymn number 319, which is entitled Christ Jesus Lay and Death's Strong Bands, which is, of course, the melody that Bach is setting throughout this entire chorale cantata. So you all probably know this melody if you've been churchgoers for most of your life, and really listen to the way that Bach sets this melody throughout the rest of the cantata. It's not always apparent, but it's always present.
And if you had been alive in the early 18th century, you absolutely would have known it.
That's right.
Well, enjoy your concert on Sunday, Austin, and hope to talk to you again for your senior recital.
Thank you. My master's recital,
master's
yes.
Master's recital. Oh, degrees. Well,
that's
this
right.
or that. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks for having me, Kara.